Welcome back to another spectacular match day, but watch this. Looks like the fans are playing Coral's free reward shaker. The half and half scarfers shaking decisively for once. They bagged a super boost. Next to them, the prawn sandwich brigade. Oh, they've shaken up a free bet after that free lunch. Play Coral's free reward shaker to win guaranteed daily rewards and offers this season. Coral, we're here for it.
18 plus UK, max one reward or offer per player per day. Reward restrictions, requirements and T's and C's apply. Gambleaware.org.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify's made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
Another edition of the Terry Collins Show, presented by Tunnel to Tower, supporting America's greatest heroes. Donate just $11 per month by going to t2t.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. I'm John Arizzi. We're happy to have back the man who just returned from another trip in New York, the longest tenured manager in Mets history, Mr. Terry Collins. Terry, welcome back.
Well, I'm glad to be back, John. It's been a while since we've done one, and there's been a lot going on, so we'll have a lot to talk about.
Yes, we certainly will. I know you've been really, really busy, and I want to thank you for the call to the bullpen you made on the last episode. Johnny Franco coming on to fill in. I think he had fun. We actually brought on a couple of Met fans, two girls who called the Francisco Lindor walk-off home run just as it happened. So we brought those two fans back. Their video went viral, and Johnny had some fun with them. We had fun with John. But it's always good to see you, TC. You had a great time up in New York. And I want to talk to you about what you did up there, because you were actually at the grand opening of a Little League league ceremony in Westchester County. So we're going to talk to you about that. And then right after that, we're going to bring on Evan Roberts. Evan Roberts from WFAN and, of course, co-host of the number one sports radio talk show in New York with Tiki Barber, the Evan and Tiki Show. And he also hosts the Rico Bronya podcast, and he has a great book out as well. So we're going to get to Evan right after we talk about your adventures up in New York. So you were at the Eastchester Little League, I understand.
That's correct. I went and talked to the kids. They had actually started the season during the week, but this was kind of the inaugural league because it was a Sunday, and tremendous turnout. Crummy day. I mean, an ugly weather my entire time up there, but boy, the turnout was great. They should be very, very proud. Beautiful state, beautiful ballpark, beautiful field, and the guys that ran that program, what a job they did. What they do, and then of course the parents were great, and had fun talking to the kids for a little while and getting to meet everybody. So it was a nice day.
Yeah, it was. We had gotten several pictures from the organization, and it just looked like everybody had a great time. And you actually ran into one of my friends that I worked with at Scripps Television Networks, Tina Messina, who was up there. Her son Brandon is in the Little League, so you got a chance to meet her and so many others. So there's Tina right there with you, Terry, and she's a great executive up in the television market in New York and ad sales. And then you gave a speech, and there was just a nonstop line of kids wanting to say hello to you. And I understand that your speech, inspirational speech to these kids, was pretty cool. So you must have had a great time.
I had to shorten it up a little bit, John. You know, the attention span of, you know, when they started knocking each other's hats off and poking them, I looked around and said, ooh, I think I better speed this up a little bit. So, but it was very fun. It's, you know, as I told them, the game's in a good spot. When you've got 650 little leaguers in one league, the game's in a good position up there.
Yeah, and then you shot right over to New Jersey to the Woodbridge Brewing Company, and you did a watch-along at that St. Louis Cardinals-Mets doubleheader, and I understand that place was packed out.
It was tremendous turnout, tremendous fans. I mean, huge Mets fans, and I went from table to table, and of course they're like all fans. The up and downs of those games. You know, the Mets lost the doubleheader, but you know there was some exciting moments, and then there'd be something would happen, and oh, they'd be down, and then they'd be high, up, be happy again. So it's I just told them, hey, look, you know, you wait till the 27th out's made before you get too bummed out. So
yeah,
but it was a lot of fun. It was a nice long day, and. But it's always fun to sit there and talk to the fans.
Yeah. Well, they still adore you. And, so anytime you're out there appearing somewhere, those fans, pack it out. So, we're happy that you're back home. Hopefully you're going to play a little golf and get back to your regiment down there and no travel for a bit, hopefully for you, or are you going to be, you're going to be home for a bit, I hope.
No, I'm not going to be home for long. I'm headed to Michigan to see my my family in Michigan, and so I've got that going. And but you know, hopefully later this afternoon I'll be hitting a little round ball a little bit.
Excellent. All right, so let's get to the leadoff, and we are so excited to have on with us somebody that I'm a big fan of. He's one of the most passionate, lifelong New York Mets fans there is. He's the co-host of the number one afternoon sports talk show in New York, the Evan and Tiki Show, with New York Giants football legend Tiki Barber, heard Monday through Friday, 2 p.m. Eastern on WFAN. He also hosts the wildly popular podcast, The Rico Bronya, and I believe last night the 477th episode is in the books. He's an author as well with his book, The Mets Bible, which I got a copy of it right here. It's about scoring. It's called The Mets Bible, scoring 30 years of fandom, highlighting some of the thousands of games he's meticulously documented since the age of 8 years old. Let's say hi to Evan Roberts.
That author part sounds weird. I'm not used to being called an author, but thank you very much.
Hey, Evan, it's a real pleasure to have you on the show, and thanks for taking some time out during your busy schedule to be on for a little bit, and we'll have some fun today.
Thank you. I'm honored to be asked. Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, excellent. How long do both of you know each other? Have you met personally or just talked on the radio? Tell us about that.
I don't think Terry remembers, but when he was hired, he came into the FAN studios and I gave like some weird fandom managerial advice about bunting and sacrifice bunts. And I think he looked at me like, why is this twerp saying anything to me? But yeah, that was my first interaction with Terry. And then unfortunately, I probably criticized you 500 times on the radio. So,
well, I was used to it, Evan. I was used to it, but sure. You know, those first couple of years there, you know, as we were trying to adjust the team and set it up for the future, you know, I did that show with Mike for quite a while. And then yeah. When he would be off or on vacation or something, you guys filled in for the show. So, you know, and again, the one thing people don't understand when you're, at least for me, when you're managing, you know, people have opinions and you're allowed to have them. You're allowed to voice them as long as it's not a lie. And I've never, ever heard you, and I've heard your show. I was just in New York last week, and you know, I turn your show on, and you know, hey, you've got an educated opinion of what's going on, and you're allowed to have that. So it never bothered me.
I appreciate that. That's like most Met fans. Most Met fans, and I think that's part of what makes the Met fan base so great, is that we are loud and we are opinionated, and we may be wrong 80% of the time, but we're very opinionated about what we're watching, good and bad.
Well, I agree. You know, the one thing, of course, it's ever, and Evan, as you know, I mean, in the press, even my press conference when the games were over, a lot of times they're asking, well, did you think about doing this? And I try to tell everybody, you know, when you're making a decision to dugout, you think about every angle you have, and then right. You have to narrow it down to what you think's the best option at that particular time. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And when it doesn't, you're going to get criticized. So, you know, it all comes with the territory of the job. But you know what? I wouldn't have traded 1 minute of it. For, you know, what a great experience I had.
Sure.
Excellent. Let's get started with the Mets and what's going on with the team today. They just completed a six-game road trip, lost two or three to the Cardinals, won two or three against Arizona. Since they swept the Phillies last month, they've gone 6-6 after a red-hot 18-7 start. Let's get both of your thoughts on this road trip and overall feelings on where the club is right now.
Go ahead, Evan. Go ahead, Terry. You, of course, go first.
Well, I mean, it's baseball, you know, and it's a long year, and you're going to have ups and downs and goods and bads. And, you know, you just try to ride that consistent wave if you can. You know, the games against the Cardinals, they just left too many guys on base. And that's, you know, and again, that's part of the game. You know, I've always, John, you and I have talked about this, you know, the one thing about baseball, and of course, the game for me today is completely different than how I learned it, how I thought we taught it. You know, it was about, you know, trying to move runners along, trying to have productive outs and not just worry about hitting home runs or hitting the ball over the fence or worrying about how hard I hit a ball. I guess wish I could tell you how many times we won a game by hitting a 60-mile-an-hour bloop single that drove in a run with two outs and ended up being the game winner. So, you know, when I watch teams that have troubles, you know, driving in runs, a lot of times I look at the at-bat. Hey, you know, were you willing to go the other way? You know, because they're not going to give you something that you can pull or whatever it might be. And those were the things that, you know, we used to talk about in meetings, you know, your hitters meetings, your pitchers meetings. But, you know, again, the game is changed. But I think they got a good team. Their pitching has really been, for the most part, very, very solid. And that's, in the long run, that's what's going to make a difference down the road. And, you know, do I get tired of watching guys go out there for 72 pitches? Yes. But that's what the game is today. So, you know what, I watch and don't try to criticize because that's the way it's played today. And I think Carlos has done a tremendous job managing those situations.
I was actually pretty happy with that road trip, even though they were 500, 3-3, because after they swept the Phillies, and I think every Met fan is thinking, oh my God, we're going to run away with the NL East. This is unbelievable. My brain kept telling me they're going to cool off. The question is the cool off going to be losing 8 out of 11, or is the cool off just going to be playing 500 baseball? And so far the cool off has been 500 baseball. Yeah, they split a series against the Nationals. They lost two games they shouldn't have lost. They lost the series to the Cardinals. They could have won both of those games. I totally get it. And losing those games are frustrating in the moment. But when I look at the big picture of what they've done since the sweep of the Phillies, they've managed to just be decent. And the way I look at a baseball season is if you can be decent 75% of the time and then have a couple of big winning streaks, you just won 90 games. You're a playoff team. So I've been okay with the way they're playing. I think that it is clearly frustrating when Brandon Nimmo is leaving a small country on base, not to just pick on him. But I think that's been probably the frustrating thing as a fan, that they've had a lot of scoring opportunities. There's been a lot of games this season where they're a hit away from turning a loss into a win. But I have confidence that's going to change. I think this is a really good lineup. I think eventually they're going to average 5 runs per game. They're going to be a top 5 offense in the league. So it's frustrating in the moment, but I feel pretty good about where they are right now. The schedule is going to stiffen a little bit, playing the Cubbies, playing the Yankees in a couple of weeks. But I certainly think they're up for the challenge.
Yeah, I do too, Evan. The game's hard. You know, the other side, I've said it many times, you know, guys on the other side of the field, they're pros too. And their job's to get you out or to catch the ball, make a big play or make a big pitch. But that's all part of the game. But they've got some depth in the team, and injuries are going to come and go today. But, you know, I still like what they've done on their pitching. And I just think that's, you know, down the road, that's what's going to be the difference is they're going to be able to go head-to-head every night. They're going to run somebody out there and beat you.
It's the cinematic event of the year. Critics say incredible, jaw-dropping, action-packed with savings.
You're talking about Thunderbolts?
No, Sergey. It's 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Compass Market. A wonderful offer.
So?
That you can use to see Marvel Studios' Thunderbolts only in cinemas.
Woohoo! I'll get the popcorn.
Get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday with Compare the Market. Simples!
When you take out a qualifying product to Compare the Market, one membership per year, participating cinemas, 2 standard tickets only, cheap as free. T's and C's apply.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. And on the pitching, I mean, their ERA, when you're looking across MLB, they're first in ERA, 2.89, second in strikeouts, first least home runs allowed in the majors, and opponent slugging percentage are also leading the league with the lowest. And so it's been an interesting look at what's going on with the pitching staff, and I wish the guys would go deeper in the game. And Kodai Senga in yesterday's performance, boy, he had a rough few innings, but he still managed to pitch six innings, not letting up a run. His ERA, I was looking at some stats, and the lowest ERA through first seven starts in a season. This is for the Mets. I mean, Santana had a 0.78 in 2009, then DeGrom, Viola, all under one, Nolan Ryan in 71. But Senga is there in fifth place with a 1.16 ERA to start the season off. So he's gritty. And Evan, I heard you talking about Kodai. He's just gutting it out. I mean, this guy is incredible. Talk to us about what you feel about Kodai.
Well, it's funny, Terry, you were saying earlier how different baseball is. I'm only 41, but I've seen some incredible differences. And one of my biases growing up is I loved great starting pitching. I love guys that go deep into games. And that's always been a thing, like a DeGrom guy, even though DeGrom didn't go as deep into games as other guys. What I am learning over the last two or three years is that it is a different world. And sometimes, yeah, you're going to take a guy out at 87 pitches, not because his pitch count is necessarily that high, but also third time around the batting order, the way a guy is looking more kind of ineffective third time around, fifth inning, sixth inning. And I've learned to accept that. I've made peace with the fact that Kodai Senga, because I think he's a great example of this, is not someone who's throwing eight innings. I'd love to see him throw eight innings. I'd love to have a guy pitch nine innings. Like when Luis Severino pitched the complete game last year, it was like I fell off my chair. Like, oh my God, I can't believe the guy went nine innings. So I'm learning to accept that we have to view starting pitchers a lot differently than even we did 5 years ago, let alone 20 years ago. And Kodai Senga is one of those guys. And he ticks a lot of Met fans off. I don't think it's fair because he doesn't pitch every 5 days, because it seems like the Mets handle him with a lot of care. But honestly, when you go out there every 6 days, here's what I ask for. Can you give the team a chance to win? Six scoreless innings is giving your team a chance to win. Walking five guys, which he did in the first three or four innings, but then finding a way out of all of those jams, whether it's a big double play, whether it's getting bailed out by your defense, Tyrone Taylor making a great play in center, he found a way to keep him off the board. And I appreciated the fact that while Senga's command was off yesterday, he didn't give up any runs. Isn't that the freaking name of the game? Like, don't give up runs. And so I've grown an appreciation for Senga, and I'm also learning, and this has really been a lesson I've picked up on over the last 2 years, don't go nuts that a starter doesn't go that deep into games. Don't go nuts that a starter didn't throw 110 pitches. It's a different world. And if you have a good bullpen, which the Met bullpen's been good so far, sometimes your best chance at winning a game, yeah, is taking Kodai Senga out after six innings. So that ERA is sparkling. I'd hope he can mix in a couple of seven-inning, eight-inning starts, but I don't expect it. And that's just kind of the new world that we're living in. But Senga deserves a lot of credit. The guy didn't pitch basically at all last year, other than the quick cameo we saw in the playoffs and the 5 minutes he pitched against the Braves. And he's come out and he's got off to a hell of a start.
Yeah, I mean, there's no better way than that's a perfect description of what's going on today. You know, one of the things, though, Evan, I got to tell you that even we used to do years ago, there are nights, you know, we had the same data that, you know, after X amount of pitches, I managed the Angels. We had a stat where we had every pitcher that we had, if he threw from 60 to 75 pitches, what the batting average was, from 75 to 90, what the batting average was. So we had all that data that, hey, look, if they got through 75 pitches, you know, they didn't get it. Chuck Finley's numbers were unbelievable after 100 pitches. Nobody hit the guy after 100 pitches. So it was, you know, so that's how we used to kind of run our stuff. But, you know, once in a while when it's easy for them, when they're just sailing and you see it, you know, there's, for me, let them go. You know, yeah. And so the next, okay, maybe the next start, you back them down a little bit more. But in the long run, you know, they're going to learn, you know, they're going to teach themselves how to get out of some certain jams. And today, I just see guys, you know, they get to 70 pitches and they're looking to see who's warming up. And so it's a little different for me. It's a little harder for me because, you know, to find those, the Jake DeGroms of the world that, or the Matt Harveys of the world, that they didn't want to come out. They didn't want to come out after 75, 80 pitches. And those were the guys. And that's why, you know, I talked to Carlos Mendoza a couple of times about bullpen use. And, you know, he asked me about, you know, some of the teams I had. And I said, Carlos, I was getting 7-8 innings out of my starters. I only had to, you know, I only had to manage a couple of innings out of the bullpen. You got to manage four a night. Yeah. You know, that's a tough assignment every night. And that's why I think he's done such a great job with it. But, you know, it is. And Evan, you are absolutely 100% right. That's the game today. We still love the game. So we learn how to deal with it and move on.
I tell you one thing that's affected me too is I was a big National League guy, so I hated when they took the pitcher hitting away and they added the DH. But now that it's been here for 3 years, I gotta adapt. I can't sit here and complain about it all day. And it changed my philosophy too in terms of how it's easier to go to your bullpen, have a guy who looks effective getting two outs, and then bring him back for a second inning or a third inning, because you don't have to worry about double switching. You don't have to worry about the pitcher hitting. And you also seem to have more guys in your bullpen nowadays who can pitch multiple innings. So yeah, you're asking for less from your starters, but I think the rule change is A, an extra guy being on your roster. So now most teams have 8 guys in their bullpen. B, you don't have to worry about the pitcher hitting, and more guys, it seems, in the bullpen are now guys who can pitch 2 innings out of the pen or 3 innings out of the pen. So you're able to get multiple innings. And I think that also kind of helps in managing your bullpen, especially considering you're going to your bullpen earlier every single night than you used to. I think that
absolutely
helps.
Absolutely. That's perfect description of how you run your team now.
Yeah, the game has certainly changed. I want to turn attention to Juan Soto. And, of course, this guy's under the microscope no matter what he does. If he walks out onto the field once he takes his position in right field, if he's sitting in the bullpen in between innings, everyone has the microscope on Juan Soto. Now, he's got a couple home run games. He had a couple good blasts in Arizona. His OPS is over 8. He's got a 1.3 OPS since May 1st. He's coming around. He's starting to heat up a little bit. But because his personality has been, I guess, a little aloof, everyone is like, where's the shuffle? What is he doing here? Why don't they just let the guy play and just do what he's doing, because he's starting to heat up? And Evan, as you predicted, you think that this big breakout moment is going to take place at the Subway Series at Yankee Stadium. So talk to us about Soto, what you're seeing. Should the fans kind of calm down about him? And TC, I know you'd like to weigh in as well.
This whole thing is crazy. People are getting nuts about Juan Soto. It drives me nuts.
Me too. You know, John, I did a couple of things last week. I talked to some people about last week. You know, even 15, 10 years ago when I was sitting in the dugout, you'd sit there and there'd be somebody on the other team that in your pitchers or your pregame meeting with your pitching staff, you said, you cannot let this guy beat you. And there are times, and I even had Randy Johnson tell me, there were certain guys in the lineup where they'd come up, and of course, they can't do it today because of the pitch clock, but he'd step off the mound and he'd say, this guy is not getting a hit, I'm telling you. And they'd bear their ass down to get that guy out. Well, Juan Soto's that guy. And so every day the game starts, that other team's starting pitcher saying, this guy's not beating me. Fortunately, the guy hitting behind him is red hot. But, you know, they're working. And if you watch Juan's at bats, you know, and he's one of those guys that's got a great eye. He's got a great command of the strike zone. They're on the edges all the time to him. And if somebody rings one up that's a couple inches off the plate that he said, first of all, even if it might be a strike, I don't want to swing at that pitch yet. They're pitching him pretty damn tough, man. And again, you in the big leagues, you get yourself in a hole where you're 1-2 and 0-2 all the time. You ain't going to get hits. I'm telling you. Pitching so good that, you know, that it's really hard to come back in those counts. So I think he's going to get, and I totally agree with what everybody's saying, let the guy play. Let's judge him after 550 at-bats and see what he's got, because this guy's just way too good a player not to put up numbers through 162 games.
He's going to produce. Like, he's been producing. Like, if you look at his overall numbers, they're fine. Like, I think his 162-game pace is 30 home runs, 80 RBIs, not enough RBIs, but a high OPS. I think the issue he's had, where a lot of Met fans have criticized him, is that he hasn't gotten big hits. And that's true. Like, his numbers with runners in scoring position is terrible. But what I would ask any Met fan is, why do you think that is? You think he's pressing? You think it's New York pressure? I don't buy it at all. He had a 3-run home run the other day with guys on base, except Victor Scott climbed the freaking fence and made a catch. Like, it happens. So I have the full confidence that Juan Soto will eventually mash with guys on base. But this whole thing between he's not shuffling enough, he didn't high-five Pete Alonso enough, and some Met fans booing him reminds me of Piazza. And some Met fans they don't want to admit this. It's like a dirty secret they don't like to talk about. When the Mets traded for Mike Piazza, he was hitting 350, okay? He was hitting 350 as a Met. He grounds into a double play in a game in August, and the guy behind me at Shea starts booing him. And I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, you got to explain this to me. And I'm 15 years old at the time, scrawny as hell. It's not like I'm going to fight him. I say, can you please explain to me why you're just booing this guy? And he said, well, he never gets the big hit. He's Mike Piazza. He's a superstar. We traded Preston Wilson for him. And I think the same mentality is happening right now with Juan Soto. The expectations are so insanely high that if he's not hitting a home run in every at-bat, fans are criticizing. Now, Mike Piazza turned out to be okay, and he turned into one of the great Mets of all time. And also, one other thing, people didn't think he liked being a Met. That's the other story, because when they acquired him, he was a free agent at the end of the year, and there was all that hand-wringing of, does he like being here? Does he like his teammates? Met fans are doing the same crap with Juan Soto. The way he looks at people, oh, is he happy? Does he regret leaving the Yankees? Like, literally, shut up. What are we doing? We're embarrassing ourselves. So it reminds me of the way we handled Piazza. And now no one admits that what I just said about Mike actually happened. Because, oh, Mike, we would never rip Mike Piazza. We love him. Trust me, 5 years from now, maybe a year from now, people are going to pretend that they ever criticized Juan Soto because he didn't give a hard enough handshake to Pete Alonso after Pete hit a home run. He will be fine. He is fine. And yes, I think his epic Met moment probably happens at Yankee Stadium when he reminds Yankee fans what they lost when he left as a free agent.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell you, it was like the Zapruder film when Lindor hit that walk-off home run. And all of a sudden, it's like, where's Soto? How come he's not there? Yeah. And I'm like, what's going on here? You know, it was crazy the way it was kind of a conspiracy. Oh, he didn't celebrate with the team. And then there was a, you know, shot of him obviously there. So, I mean, it is crazy. It's insane. And I do remember the fans booing Piazza early on too. So that was ridiculous. So it should be an interesting Subway Series for sure. I want to turn attention over to Luis Angel Acuña. My opinion on this guy, when he came up in September, electrifying, there was something about him where he had the it factor. He looked like a star right out of the box, and he performed pretty well, made the team here. For me, and I don't know if you agree or not, but he's kind of the most electrifying young player to debut with the Mets since the early days of Jose Reyes. I mean, he brings the electricity, the speed. It's time for him to play every day. Evan, TC, do you agree?
You know, I know this, John. He's fun to watch. And he's done well so far. You know, and I always go back. You know, they're paying Jeff McNeil a lot of money to be a second baseman too. So, you know, I go back to what some of those great managers told me years ago. And you know, everybody loves young players. Just be careful of playing them more than they're ready to play for. You know, more than they're ready to play, because they're the ones who are going to get your ass fired at the end if they don't keep it going through 162 games. So, and I like him. I think he's good. But I just, you know what? Hey, look, so far, one of the things that's helped him is he's probably learning is the days he doesn't play. He's watching everything else that's going on. He's getting an education, sitting on the bench, talking to his teammates, watching the game happen, and the speed, what it's going to take speed-wise. He's got some skills. There's no doubt about it. But I like the way they're using him right now. I'd leave him. I may be the only guy. Because I was a utility player, I'm not a big believer in everybody playing five positions, okay? You know what? You lose. There's something that's taken away from being really good at one spot, you know? So I just think I hope they leave him at second base and they can take Mac, and because he's one, at least we know he can play corner spots in the outfield and fill in some at second base. But I like the way they're using him. I think they're – Carlos is putting him in the right spots, which I think is helping him have success.
It's so funny because when you said, and this is where I don't have this perspective, right? I would never, my answer would be play him every day. What the hell are we doing?
Right.
But you bring up a point that makes me think. You're like, hey, you play a kid like this every day. This is what gets managers fired. Yeah. And it's a great point because it's something I never think of and nothing the fans
me neither.
Think of. Right.
Me neither.
The fans would say, like, I would scream and yell in the radio and say, this guy's got to play every day. This guy's got, and I'm at that point. But it's interesting because I don't think of that as, boy, you play him every day. Maybe he gets exposed and maybe it costs you your job. But I've been so impressed by him because I was surprised. I thought that what he did last year filling in for Lindor, incredible, right? He had a terrible spring training. He didn't hit the minor leagues last year, so I wasn't as sold on him being on the major league roster. And then he made that comment, or Lindor, I should say, made the comment where, yeah, he plays better when the lights are brighter. And I was like kind of offended. Like, dude, you're a minor leaguer. Like, you can't hit in AAA. You can't hit in spring training, but all of a sudden the major league lights are on and you're better. Well, Lindor was prophetic because he's been great with the lights on. And as a Met fan, I do want him to play every day simply because I think he gives them the best chance to win. He plays better defense at second base than McNeil. He's provided some really good at-bats. Forget about the batting average or anything like that. Like, he's taken some really close pitches off the plate that I always heard, at least from the scouting reports in the minors, he would hack at. And he had some great at-bats. Remember that one on opening day against Josh Hader and the Astros? Like, that was a sign of basically things to come. He can steal bases. So, yeah, I'm in the position of I want to see him every day. If you're going to bench him, what I ask Mendy nicely is don't do it in back-to-back days. It annoyed me in the Arizona series when he wasn't in the starting lineup in game one and game two. Like, I get what you said, Terry. All right, there's a day you should sit, you can learn. But the back-to-back day thing kind of bothered me because right now, just to simplify it, I think he gives the Mets the best chance to win when he's out there.
You know, Evan, I'm gonna bring up a name to you when you talked about how the minor league stuff, and you're absolutely right. But I remember in 2013 or 2012 when we brought Matt Harvey up.
Yeah.
Matt said to me one night, he pitched, I don't know how many, two or three great games, and he came in my office and he said, hey, why do you think it took me so long to get here? And I said, Matt, I have a player development background. I read every game report from the minor leagues, every game. And I followed everything you did since the day we signed you. And what I'm seeing is not what I read about. Mm. Okay. I saw a guy that had a 3.56 or a 3.6 ERA in AAA and, you know, throwing 93 with a pretty good curveball. This guy that's throwing 98 with a 90 mile an hour slider. I didn't read about that guy. So, and you're right. Those sometimes that second deck and those brighter lights, they bring out a little extra energy in people.
And it's great that it eventually worked for Matt, and it's great that it's working for Acuna, but who the heck could blame you or the Mets for not calling that guy up sooner? Like, how are you supposed to know if you're not performing at a lower level?
And that's all you can do. You know what? When they get their chance, Evan, when they get their opportunity, make the most of it. And Acuna's doing it now. Harvey did it. DeGrom did it. Conforto did it. Mats did it. They got up. They got that opportunity, and they ran with it. Some guys get intimidated, like you say. Those bright lights, hey, they're too bright. And I've had guys that it's too bright for them. And so it's going to be fun to see how we get into the second half of the season, because we know there's going to be some banged up guys. And, you know, and so this kid may be, come July 1st, the second baseman for the rest of the season. But I think, you know, as he learns, as he goes, put him in opportunities against guys you know he's going to have some pretty good at bats against. Keep him positive, keep his head positive. Because I've also had guys, I had a kid named Todd Green who was a good young hitting player. And we played the Baltimore Orioles, and he was my catcher. He played 3 days in a row, and he saw Scott Erickson, Mike Mussina, and I can't even remember the third guy who was just as good as those two guys. And we're on the mound, and Todd looked at me and he said, is everybody in the league like this? Because if they are, I'm not going to be here long. You know? So and that's how it is. You pick your spots where these guys, you say, you know what? I'm going to face him against this tough guy. But tomorrow, when there's another tough guy, I might let him, okay, have a deep breath. So I just think I like the way that they brought along the way he's coming along, because all he's going to do now is his confidence is going to grow and grow. I go back and look at what's, you know, poor Brett Beatty. I got to know Brett a little bit, and he has these flashes, and, you know, it's tough, but because you're in there every day and the expectations get high, man. And there's a lot of times, as you know, Evan, failure can lead to some dark times. So yeah. I just liked what they're doing right now. And again, I think as the season goes on, he may become the everyday guy.
Yeah, well, he's doing it. He's making an impression. But Terry, I mean, you make some great points. You know, it's like Evan and I, the fan in us, you know, we sometimes think differently, but then you kind of bring everything down to earth and kind of describe what the process should be. And
you know, John, I'm watching, right, you know, and I know they got Siri because I understand he's a great defender. How about the job that's being done in center field today? I mean, this guy's playing great.
Yeah. Tyrone Taylor has been amazing. Yeah.
Tyrone Taylor he's getting this opportunity. He's going to be there almost every day. And look at how he's run with it. And when they give him a day off, he comes in late in the game and he's ready to play.
Yeah.
because he knows he belongs there.
Yeah, I love Tyrone Taylor. And Evan, last year, before the season started, on a show that Terry and I had also done, I think Mesmerized or whatever it was, I had asked you, what do you think the biggest surprise for the Mets is going to be in 2024? And you said Tyrone Taylor. So
I said that?
Yes.
Or Terry said that. Me?
You said it, Evan.
I don't even remember. Yeah. Oh, told you so.
There you go.
Well, at least one part of that trade worked out, because that was the Adrian Hauser trade. And we barely knew ye. You know, was here for a couple of weeks, pitched to an 80 ERA, and they DFA'd him. But yeah, no, Tyrone Taylor's been a hell of a player. I'm skeptical that he's an everyday player. Like, I don't know. I think he's still probably better suited as a fourth outfielder. But he just had a great trip. He was on base a million times. He plays really good defense. And really, that defense part is just so important, because when you look at Soto, who's average at best in right field, and Nimmo, who feels not 100% in left field, I think having like an A-plus glove like Tyrone Taylor, especially with Siri out, is really, really important. And yeah, he's been a good Met for the year plus he's been here.
Yeah,
absolutely. Before we wrap up this segment, Evan, I wanted to talk to you about the Rico. I mean, the Rico Bronya podcast has really evolved over the past year or so, especially since you've been on YouTube. And I wanted to ask you about Rico, how the evolution of that came. Now, you've been doing the show, I believe, since 2018?
No, so we started doing it in 2022, believe it or not. It was in the...
Okay.
I guess the early part of that season, it was the first time the company was like, hey, would you want to do a Mets-specific podcast? And I'm like, yeah, because sometimes on Sports Talk Radio, you can't get as into the weeds as maybe you want to, especially with so much going on. Like right now in sports, the Knicks are the biggest story. We'll barely talk about the Mets. So it piqued my interest to have that outlet to always talk Mets. And so, yeah, early 2022, we started. It's almost 3 years, I guess over 3 years now.
And now you're doing live. Each one of these episodes is live up on YouTube, and those numbers are fantastic. But I just wanted to see if you're enjoying doing the Rico as much as you're doing your afternoon drive show. Or is it
No, it's a lot of fun, because it's as a diehard Met fan who's into every game, even when they stink, like late in 2023, or even when the games don't feel as important. I'm into it, man. I score every game. I watch every game. It was one of the first things I said to my wife on our first date. I said, let me warn you, I'm obsessed with the Mets. I score every game. And she said, I don't know what that means. And I said, I'll explain it to you at some point. So I love talking about the team, complaining about the team, celebrating the team. It is certainly a lot of fun. And I get to continue the name of Rico Bronya, one of the most underrated baseball players, and one of the great gloves of first base in Major League Baseball history. And so to have a podcast in his honor, in his name, hopefully that name will now live forever.
I think it will. The Rico Bronya. It's after every Met series, and there's a lot of like instant reaction shows too. So just go to the YouTube and just subscribe to it there. But we're going to return, Evan. We have one more segment with you, and we're going to go over the book a little bit and talk about 2015, 10-year anniversary of the Mets National League Championship Series. So we'll go without you and TC. So, Marsh, if you could do a one-shot here, and I'll talk to everybody about Tunnel of Towers and let everybody know what's going on with our sponsor. Of course, some amazing things always happening with the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. So a couple of updates, as you as everybody knows by watching this on YouTube, listening to the show. We have had so many Met ball players involved with Tunnel to Towers with PSA messages. There's another Mets player who has joined the Tunnel to Towers team. Brandon Nimmo is supporting the foundation and his work to help America's greatest heroes. Brandon is appearing in a new PSA. We're going to run that in just a few seconds here, but we also want to tell you about Tunnel to Towers Foundation continuing its mission to do good. They, of course, were born from the tragedy of 9/11. Tunnel to Towers has provided mortgage-free homes for Gold Star and fallen responder families with young children and catastrophically wounded veterans. To date, the foundation has paid for 1,500 homes. You can help them continue their work by donating just $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2, T, dot foundationtunneloftowers.org. And now there are new ways to contribute to the foundation. Tunnel of Towers is now accepting donations of vehicles, land, and whether it's a classic car or a clunker, the foundation will even accept your auto, even if it's not running. They'll tow it, they'll sell it, use the proceeds to help families of our heroes. The same is true with property. So for more information on all of this, go to t2t.org. And earlier we mentioned that Mets Brandon Nimmo has joined other Mets stars and legends like Pete Alonso, Daryl Strawberry, Mike Piazza, so many others, including our own Terry Collins, on creating awareness for Tunnel to Towers. So let's debut the recent PSA we did with Brandon Nimmo on behalf of our sponsor, Tunnel to Towers.
I'm New York Mets outfielder Brandon Nimmo. I have great respect for the work Tunnel to Towers does to support our first responders and our military. These are the people who keep us safe. You can join Tunnel to Towers in their mission to do good. By donating just $11 a month, go to t2t.org for more information on how your donation can make a big difference.
Tunnel to Towers Foundation. We are back with Terry Collins and WFAN's Evan Roberts. Gentlemen, welcome back. 10 years ago was the last time the Mets made it to the World Series. 2015's Mets is a topic we've been discussing all season here on the show. And today we get the perspective of Evan Roberts on the 2015 NL Champions and how special that year was. And for this segment, I did highlight a few games from your book, The Mets Bible, to get both yours and Terry's memories of some of the games that I highlighted. But Evan, before we even get to that, the Bible, tell us about how this book deal came about and your history of scoring games.
Well, I'm nuts. When I was about 8 years old, my dad taught me how to score a game, which is a normal American story. Dad or mom teaches son or daughter how to score a baseball game. What became abnormal is I loved it. I kept doing it and doing it and doing it to the point where I would score road games. I would score home games. And then I went away and got a job and was an adult. And I still scored games and I would DVR games. And I just loved scoring baseball games and I still do it. And it's certainly been, you know, it benefits my job, you know, talking about sports for a living. But even if I wasn't talking sports for a living, I would just score games. Keeping track of it, it keeps you engaged in what's going on. It's an easy reference point to go back and say, hey, how's Juan Soto done today? Oh, yeah, he's 1-for-4, and he got a hit on a 1-2 pitch. So I became obsessed with it. And a couple of years ago, I was on the air on my old show with Craig Carton, and Craig said, probably sarcastically, because he was a sarcastic guy, you know, you should make a book with this. You should publish it. And I was like, really? You know what? I think you got something there. So I was like, would anyone buy this? And so I spoke to my agent, and I spoke to Triumph Books, and they said, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. So what I decided to do was take the most memorable games I scored. And memorable doesn't mean wins, because that would be a lie. Memorable is amazing wins, horrible losses, games that are memorable personally, just because something happened in my life or something happened that made it very personal to me. And so I picked the number 81 because there are 81 home games. And my dream has always been to go to all 81 home games, something I have not accomplished, but I came close. And so basically it was, let me publish these scorecards and then talk about my memories and experience from that game, whether it was watching on TV or being in the ballpark. And it's my Mets Bible. So I was able to publish that about a year ago. It was very cathartic writing about a lot of these games. Some of these games still hurt me to this day. Some of them are negative memories. So it was certainly fun to do, and I was honored that people bought it. So thank you very much. My Mets Bible, still on sale now.
It is. It's out there and it's great. And you've kind of handed down that tradition to your son, Jet, now, because I believe he's beginning to score games as well.
Yes. Yes. And he got an earlier start than me because he started scoring games at 6. And I didn't like ask him. He just saw Dad doing it and said, I want to do that. I want to do that. I was like, all right. So he enjoys it as well. And my 4-year-old Spence may do it eventually. I don't know if they'll ever continue the obsession like me, but it's completely up to them. That's the one thing I teach my kids, you know. I like the Mets. I hope you like the Mets, but I'm not going to force you to do anything. You know, make your own decisions.
And you keep every one of the scorebooks. And how many games in total do you think you've scored?
Oh, thousands. Honestly, thousands. I could actually give you an exact number because that's how crazy I am. I have a written list of how many games I have scored every year. So there is a grand total. I think it's in the thousands. And yeah, I keep every scorecard. It's a crazy obsession. But at this point, how can I get rid of them? How can I get rid of a game from 1996? That would be crazy to me.
Yeah, you can't. It's just amazing. The book is amazing. So let's talk about 2015. I took four games to talk about, and we'll get to that. But overall, in 2015, being a fan, covering it for WFAN, your thoughts on that year, that team, and TC, we talk about, you and I talk about this as well. But Evan, what did 2015 mean to you?
It's my favorite Met team of my lifetime. Very, very simple. It means more to me than 99 and 2000 and 2006. And I think the reason for that, because some of my fellow Met fans who are my age would argue, well, what about 2000 or what about 1999 or whatever? The reason 2015 is very, very special is because for a myriad of reasons. Number one, I think the nature of the homegrownness of the team, the fact that this was a team that you could kind of feel coming. I remember in September of 2014, sitting at Citi Field, it was a rainy night with my fiance, soon to be wife. And I said, I know this may sound crazy, honey. This team's going to get good and they're going to get good quick. And she's like, what? They're about to finish up. What are you talking about? And I was like, you can feel it. And so I think that natural progression of seeing this young team emerge and seeing the young players that we were excited about, Jake winning the rookie of the year, Matt Harvey coming back from Tommy John, like you could just feel it. And then that season, 2015, featured so many of the ups and downs, like normal life. You get off to a great start, then they struggle and the offense sucks so badly that we think Juan Uribe and Kelly Johnson are saviors. And then Cespedes. And before that, Flores and the crying and the walk. Like, it was like a storybook. I'm still bitter about the ending. I mean, that's just unfortunate. Like, I still can't like get over the losses. And I guess that's just part of being a fan. But I love that team because that team was so special, so organically special to me that it stings me the most for that. But it also gives me the most joy the most when I think back on any season. So it's got the good and it's got the bad.
Terry, any comments? You saw it coming, obviously, sitting in that dugout.
Well, you know, Evan was right. And I mean, there were lots of times we had an idea, obviously, again, due to the fact that I think pitching is the key. We saw what we thought was going to be a dynamic pitching staff coming. Now we'd lost Wheeler through an injury, but, you know, Matt was coming back being healthy. We knew Jake was going to be pretty good. We were hoping Steven Matz, we could, you know, keep him on the mound. We did not have any idea how fast Noah was going to develop. But, you know, I think after what was it? I think it was the first day of 2015, we lost our closer. Got suspended.
Henry Mejia. In
baseball. Yep. And so, you know, I made a decision to go with Jeurys Familia. And I know that there's a lot of people whose eyes rolled. But this guy, for me, had unhittable stuff. And if you did hit him, if it was the sinker, it was tough to get it in the air. So I thought, if we can get him to control, we got a back end of the bullpen. Now we got to, you know, figure out how to bridge the gap from starter to the closer. But we saw it coming. And you know, Sandy was great. We talked every single day. And, you know, he started talking about Michael Conforto. You know, hey, look, this guy's got a chance. This guy may get here before the year's out. So, again, and I think Evan's right. I did a post-game show about it. I think we ran a team one time that all nine guys on the field were drafted by the Mets, signed by the Mets, developed by the Mets, and got to the big leagues with the Mets. That's unheard of. Unheard of. Now, not all of them became stars, but – for the most part, that showed us that our player development, you know, system was pretty good. And we knew we had some other guys that were even maybe better coming along the line. So we thought, again, the one thing that went on that year, John, and, you know, when you're managing, you can't worry about September in the month of May. You cannot do it. You got to figure out how to get through the month of May, how to get through this week, how to get through this next weekend. So as the front office started to bring in these pieces, the change in attitude in the clubhouse was remarkable. You sensed it every day. I mean, you heard guys talking on. Now, we had good, you know, the Curtis Granderson, you know, David was out a lot of time. But Michael Kodaira was there, who we'd got signed the winter before. And these guys talked about it. And I'm going to tell you, when you have leadership in your clubhouse that talk about, we're going to get better, we're getting better, and talk about winning, again, it sends a sense that, you know, they start believing in themselves. And so as that season went along, you know, all the things we saw in April, we knew we were going to change. And we saw it last year with what the Mets did last year. But that's why, you know, I watched this year's team, and they a lot of people ask me, can you compare it to 2015? Not a chance. Not right now, no. You know, in July, August, when we see what some of the final product's going to be, maybe. But there was a progression from the time we left spring training to, let's say, the early June, where you said, hey, we got a chance to be pretty good.
Well, let's go over some of the games from that season, courtesy of Evan Robertson in the Mets Bible. June 9th, Citi Field, Giants 5, Mets 0. Chris Heston, no hits, the Mets. Evan, then TC.
Oh, man. The reason that game, like, jumped out at me is Johan's no-hitter was very special, because as a kid growing up, I love the dream of the no-hitter. Like, the no-hitter was the ultimate dream. And I was told the stories by my dad, listening to Howie Rose, Gary Cohen. We don't get no-hitters. We'll get teased. Tom Seaver will come close, but we'll never get a no-hitter. So when Johan pitched that no-hitter, it's one of my favorite moments as a Met fan. But my dad wasn't there. My dad just didn't go to that game. It sucks. It doesn't happen. And so I remember calling my dad in the middle of that game, and, like, he was – disappointed he missed it, but, you know, it's one of those days. He can't go to every single game. So when we're sitting there on a random weeknight in June and Chris Heston's pitching a no-hitter, my dad had been to thousands of games. He had never seen a no-hitter. Forget a Met no-hitter, any no-hitter. And as this game is going on, I'm looking at him. I'm like, do you want it to go down like this? Like, this is going to be the no-hitter you witness. And it was so surreal being in that ballpark and watching a no-hitter, my second, but, you know, the first one was only a few years earlier, and seeing my dad witness the first no-hitter he'd ever seen live. It sort of felt like rock bottom with the offense, but it was also the surreal nature of a no-hitter is magical. And I think it's even more magical to Met fans, because it was that holy grail for so long. Elusive. And so even seeing one, though it came from the most random guy that I don't think anyone would have heard of since, if it wasn't for the no-hitter, that was a strange night, man, at Citi Field. I'll never forget that.
Yeah. John, I've been playing you could consider organized baseball since I was 8 years old, and I was probably 65 when maybe this happened. I have never been no-hit in my life. I've seen them. I had Sid Fernandez pitch two for me in the minor leagues with the Dodgers. I have seen no hitters, but I had never, ever been no hit. And when this game started, I'm watching this guy warm up and his stuff, and I'm thinking, we're going to get this guy. We're going to get to this guy.
Yeah.
And I watched ground ball after ground ball after ground ball. And we get to the seventh inning, and I said to my pitching coach, I said, we're not getting no hit. I'm just going to tell you right now, this guy's not getting no hitters. And I'll be a son of a gun if he didn't no hit us. And to this day, I don't know how. I really don't. I mean, but again, it just tells you the games can be crazy at times.
Yeah, absolutely. August the 2nd, Citi Field, Mets 5, Nationals 2, sweeping the Nationals out of first place. And that 5-day period in July leading up to the trade deadline, one of the most historic weeks in Mets history.
Oh my God. That had everything. Cause I remember sitting in the building for the, you know, innocuous, what was it? 5-0, 6-0 loss to the Padres when Wilmer Flores was traded, and then he cried, and then he wasn't traded. And I'll admit this, cause sometimes I'm very wrong with opinions. I was so ticked off we didn't get Carlos Gomez. Like, my whole thing afterwards was, how did they let this trade fall apart? Like, Carlos Gomez is perfect for us. Now, baseball history will tell us, thank goodness that trade fell apart, because obviously it leads to Yoenis and everything else. But there's so many ups and downs from that week, the craziness of it. And that finale against the Nationals, where they completed the sweep, was the moment, and I'm certainly not alone, where I thought, we're going to win this division. Like, this story is actually going to end with something really, really positive, because to sweep Washington, considering the way the week started, considering the way they won Friday night's game with Wilmer Flores hitting the walk-off, to just everything about it. It was that moment of, we're a runaway freight train. And it turned out to be completely true, because the pennant race essentially ended shortly thereafter. It was electric in the building. You could sense that the people felt it. And it was also this just celebration, especially after the emotions, the ups and downs of the previous 5 days.
Yeah, I totally, everything Evan just said, we all went through it. I mean, you know, I didn't get caught up when I heard the rumor of the trade to Wilmer, and I've said this many times on the shows, the different shows we've done. You know, I have a phone behind me that goes to the general manager, and if this guy's traded, that phone's ringing because he's coming out of the game. Not a peep. And so, and I've told you, David Wright's, who's hurt at the time, he's standing next to me in the dugout. And he said, Terry, it's all over. This guy's traded. I said, he's not traded, David. Or else I'd be told this. I'm telling you, he's been traded. So at the end of that game, when he wasn't traded, I don't know. I felt a sense of relief. I like Carlos Gomez too. But just the fact that the energy that, you know, he portrayed and the fans portrayed to him. And like Evan said, and then he hits that home run. When he hit that home run, that's when I said, there's no telling what's going to happen here. And obviously, when we won the Sunday night game and swept the Nationals, I totally agree. It was a whole different team that got on that plane the next day. The whole different team. They believed it. They knew they were going to win. They didn't care what the score was at any point in that game, because we thought we could come back and win again.
Pivotal week for sure, and a documentary that was made of that week as well that I watch pretty often. And Evan, you were 10 years younger, but you were in there as well.
Yes.
Great week. And then September 26th, Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati. I was there myself, courtesy of J.P. Ricciardi getting me some tickets. And I got to see Mets 10, Reds 2. The Mets win the division. Evan?
That is, like, maybe there will be a day, and hopefully soon, where winning the division is just going to be like golf clap. Like, hey, great year. We won the division. Yay. No big deal. But in that moment, winning the division was euphoric, because as a Met fan, we don't do that very often. I was too young for 86 and 88. So prior to winning that game against the Reds with Matt Harvey on the mound, one division championship, one in 2006. So that game was a celebration. And I remember we had a party me and my wife had to go to. And I said, let me tell you something. We are going to finish this game. We are going to celebrate. And then we will party all night at this little dinner party. I'll tell you that right now. And so even though it was obvious we were going to win the division, I mean, it was wrapped up, that was such a celebration. For Matt Harvey to be on the mound made it even more special. And it was just so cool. It was a celebration of the accomplishment over the last few months. And as a Met fan, to kind of look around and say, I can't believe we won the division. Like, not only based on everything that happened that season, but just as a fan, we don't win divisions. They're rare. That one in 06 to this day are the only two division championships as a Met fan I have. So again, hopefully in this new era, the Mets will win like 8 straight divisions and it won't be a big deal. But 2015 and clinching that division in Cincinnati, man, that was special. Very special.
Yeah, you know, John, when you went through the first few years that I did in New York, and then to sit there and clinch a division, knowing what Evan said about the fan base and how excited they are and how vocal they are, you know, I sat back in the dugout in the ninth inning, and everybody was up against the railing, waiting to jump on the field, and I just stepped back and looked down and thought, you know, how proud I was of every guy on that team. To be able to go through all of the things that we had gone through for the year, to have this end finish the way it was, and you know, it was tremendous. I've had a lot of great times in my career, but that has to be one of the most special times, was, you know, when we clinching that title.
Yeah, I was there myself. It seemed like a home game in a lot of respects, because there were so many fans on the third base side. So it was actually a game I'll never forget. And, you know, it was just amazing to be there. But we're going to finish it up with one final game. And, of course, it's not a good memory for everybody. And that's November the 1st, Citi Field, Royals 7, Mets 2, losing the World Series at home. Evan and then TC.
I'm mad at two people for this game. And hopefully, Terry, you'll feel like you're in good company. I'm mad at you, but I'm mad at my wife, okay? Both of you hurt me that evening. Let's start with my wife. Let's start with her.
Okay.
She is not a sports fan. She's not a diehard sports fan. This is new to her. And so I said, honey, when the Mets get to Kansas City for game six, we will go. Okay, I got the approval of the bosses. We'll do the show from Kansas City. And she was all excited. Oh, we're going to have great barbecue. This is going to be great. When that ninth inning started, there were a lot of thoughts going in my head. My first thought was, I want Matt Harvey out of this game. But I'll get to that in a second. My first thought was, I can't believe what my wife just said to me. Because my wife turns to me and says, well, I guess we're going to Kansas City. And I said, excuse me? We're not going to Kansas City yet. So I was very upset. I had to explain to her that while I don't believe in jinxes, that kind of was a jinx. Don't tell me we're going to Kansas City when the game isn't over. And then number two, and I was on the, like, I was the minimum here. I'm in Citi Field and everybody wanted Matt Harvey to start the ninth inning. I'm not going to sit here and rearrange history. The entire building was chanting, we want Harvey. And I was arguing with people around me. I was so sick. I don't know why. And I'm screaming at them, he's got to come out of the game. And I'll tell you my reasons why. Obviously, I lost out. I thought it was over. I thought he gave such a performance with so much guts that my feeling was he's given it all and let's give Jay Wrist that clean inning. Because Familia just hadn't had a lot of clean innings because that's the way games were dictated. Like you go back to game one of the World Series, he came in the eighth inning. I'm not even saying I disagree with you on that, by the way, but he came in the eighth inning. I don't think that led to the quick pitch home run, but wasn't a clean inning. Had to come back for the ninth inning. Didn't have a clean inning the night before in the eighth inning when Daniel Murphy forgot how to play defense. So in my brain in this moment where I could not sit still, I'm shaking. This is why I'll give you opinions, but I could never manage a baseball team because if I couldn't sit in my own freaking seat, God knows I couldn't sit in your seat. But I'm screaming at everybody, get him out of the game. Get him out of the game. Give me a clean inning from Jairus Familia. And then when Harvey walked Lorenzo Cain. That's when I stood up and screamed, you got to get him out. You got to get him out. Now, with that said, if Lucas freaking Duda can make a throw to the plate, then we could sit back and be laughing about this. Like, ha ha, I was so wrong. But yeah, that's what I remember about that game because I really had this belief that if it got back to Kansas City, we could beat those guys. I really felt that. Give Jake another opportunity because he struggled in game two. He had the four no-hit innings and then it kind of fell apart. So yeah, my wife. And then obviously the decisions in the ninth inning. And it sucked, man, because it's a team that was so special. And I really thought we were going to win the World Series. I never thought we were going to win in 2000. I just didn't. I knew the Yankees were a dynasty. So 2015, I love because I think I believed in them more than any other team I ever believed in.
I got no answer, except I left them in. That's it.
Yeah. It was, you know.
Have 45,000 people agreeing with you, Terry. I was the one guy disagreeing.
I was one of them. Let him go back out. I was one of them. I mean, my nephew and I, we were screaming, keep him in, keep him in. But, hey, listen.
Heather, I was at a wedding. Oh, gosh. I don't know how many years. 5 years ago. I was at a wedding. And some guy was sitting at the rehearsal, at the reception. And some guy walks up and taps me on the shoulder. He said, you got 30 seconds? And I said, yeah. And he introduces himself. He said, I just want you to know, I would have taken Matt Harvey out of the game. Now, this is what, 5 years later?
Right.
I mean, huh? 5 years laughter? And yeah. I said, yeah, well, it's the way it goes. Why'd you leave him in? And I said, sir, I didn't come here tonight to talk about this. But so you're not the only one who's eating at him for years and years. I get it. If I get it once, I get it twice a week. So I might meet somebody for the first time, and there's two things they talk about. Johan Santana's no-hitter and leaving Matt Harvey in the game. Those two subjects.
And don't forget ass in the jackpot.
Yeah, well, I see enough of that too this last minute.
But here's the real question, and there's no wrong answer. Do you regret it or do you say no? Like, I had a guy who wanted to go out for the ninth inning and I believed in him. Like, how do you feel about it?
You hit it right on the head. That's exactly why I did it. You know, and again, Evan, it went back to a lot of things. You know, went back in the middle of the summer when, you know, we had these innings limits and I'm figuring out how I can't possibly keep these guys under these innings. They're so good. And so I wanted to go to a six-man rotation and the first guy that said no was Matt Harvey. He said, no, I want to pitch. And then, if you remember, Scott came out with a statement that Matt's not going to throw over 180 innings. And yeah. so Now I've got to cut him back. Now I've got to do the modern day stuff, and that is he can't ever go past five innings to keep him under these limits. And he pitched the game against the Yankees in Citi Field, pitched great. I took him out after five, and the next day he came in, he said, I'm all done with that. I want to pitch. Give me the baseball. And that's why I left him in, because you know what? He showed he deserved it. He's the intensity on his face when that dugout, when that ninth inning came, I said, go get him. And I said, same thing. When he walked Lorenzo Cain, I said, oh, shit, I don't. But, so he'd struck out Hosmer three times, and he had no chance against the slider, and he left one out over the plate. It's what it was. And, you know, one of these days I'll get grayer and grayer, and I'll still hear about it. So,
yeah. Well, it was still a magical season for sure. Evan's favorite season all time with the New York Mets, certainly one of mine as well. Evan, we want to thank you for coming on today. We know you got a show to do with Tiki Barber in just a little bit. I want to remind everybody that the Mets Bible is out there. There were so many games in here that just bring a lot of memories back, and it was a pleasure having you here today. So thank you for your time. Thank you very much.
Evan, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. All the best with your podcast, your show, and hope we can do it again sometime.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you guys having me on. And thank you, because until Mendy does it, which hopefully he will, there's only two men who have managed my team to a World Series in my lifetime, Bobby V and you. All right. So thank you for that.
You bet. Take care, Evan.
Right. Thank you.
All right, TC, Evan Roberts, and I thought that was a good segment with him.
Yeah, I mean, he's a passionate Mets fan, and studies the game, got great knowledge of it, and you anytime you have someone who's prepared, or has reasons for his thoughts, I respect that, and I think he's really good. I hear his show, and again, when you're in the city of New York, man, and you talk sports, you better have some passion about it, and he's got it.
Yeah, he does. Number one rated show, Afternoon Drive in New York with Tiki, and we appreciate Evan coming on. All right, Terry, now it's time for another Amazing Hero of the Week, brought to you by Tunnel the Towers. In this segment, we honor retired U.S. captain from the Army, James Howard, a recent recipient of a smart home courtesy of Tunnel to Towers Foundation. Let's go to that right now.
My name is James Howard, and I served in the U.S. Army.
So I spent most of my time in Iraq during my time in, and yeah, I had a couple combat injuries. One in particular, we were on foot, and I was hit by four 155 millimeter rounds about 10 feet from them. The impact alone just kind of damaged my neck area, broke some bones. We caught some shrapnel, and it rung our bell pretty good, but we were thankful to walk away from that. So I medically retired in 2010. I had another stateside injury where I was working out, and had a swimming accident where I damaged some of my C-level vertebrae on top of all the damage I'd already done. Left me a C5 quadriplegic. Tunnel to Towers came in and gave me and my family a home that has just been a life-changing gift that we're forever thankful for. A lot of the accessible features that, some people will take for granted, taking a shower, I can get in the shower and they have the handheld shower unit that can help me. I remember the many years after I was injured, I had a bucket to use over the bathroom or a shower spigot out on my deck. So I come from a family. My father was in the 82nd Airborne during Vietnam, and my grandfather was on D-Day with the 82nd Airborne as a gliderman. 9/11 just, ignited that passion to continue to serve. We got hit on our own soil, and it was time to go over there and serve and to make things right. So I can't begin to thank Tunnel to Towers for everything they've done for our family. Tunnel to Towers supports America's heroes. Please donate $11 a month at t2t.org. Never forget.
All right, that's going to about wrap it up for this edition of the Terry Collins Show. Terry, it's always great to see you. It's good to see you again. And hope it was a good one for you.
Yeah, it's a great show. It's really nice to have Evan on. And you know, we can, you know, it's a be a great day to have a roundtable one of these times and bring up about four or five of those games of 2015, and the discussions could go on for a long time.
Yeah, maybe we'll do that before the season wraps this year, because we are reminiscing about that 2015 team, which is so dear to everybody who's a Mets fan. You could subscribe to the Terry Collins Show on all podcast platforms and on the YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/ The Terry Collins Show. And Terry, we also we want to remind you, as we do each and every week, to check out Amazing Conversations with Jay Horowitz, a New York Mets podcast hosted by the foremost Mets historian. On this week's show, Jay brings on the Mets broadcast team celebrating 20 years in the booth. I got to see it yesterday on YouTube. It was a great conversation with Jay and his guests this week, Gary Cohen, Keith Hernandez, and Ron Darling. And that's available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube. And I want to thank today, as we do each and every week, our creative director, Marsh, right there in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Terry, I think he actually has become a Terry Collins historian, especially with your Arizona days. Marsh is a big fan of yours, and it's great to have him with us as well. Also, we want to thank our researcher, Dominic DiBiase. For Terry Collins, this is John Arezzi. We'll see you next time.